Well, I am not sure where to begin. When I agreed to speak at this congregation, no one mentioned what a phenomenal choir you have. I have heard good choirs, and you are among the best. That is, if you're not here, if I was not going to be in Atlanta next weekend, I would come myself. Just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. I also want to let you know, I know that this congregation is in a period of ministerial transition, and to have 20 people join the congregation, 8 of whom could be here this morning, that is a testimony to the quality and the integrity of this congregation. So I just really want to applaud you personally for that. That was amazing, and I'm really ministered to by your new members here this morning. Living with my wife, Carol, a mediator and an English teacher, has some distinct advantages. In the write-up for this sermon, I shared with you that the dangers of a misplaced comma that Carol shares with her new English students. More specifically, the difference between "let's eat, Carol," and "let's eat, Carol." And so I want to give credit, due credit, to my wife, Carol, who also provided the idea for this sermon, that the words that we choose are important. Imagine my surprise when I Googled my sermon title, "Watch Your Language," and the first of many hits was to the 2015 Avengers movie, Age of Ultron. I was amused by the trailer and such quips as, "You kiss your mother with that mouth?" The Avengers movie and the story for all ages notwithstanding, my sermon is not about bad language, and it's not about being politically correct. Rather, I am increasingly convinced that the words we choose can be an important spiritual practice. Let me begin with a personal story, which is particularly relevant, given that Thanksgiving was just 10 days ago. When Carol and I adopted our son, Michael, at age 7, we decided to introduce more ritual into our lives. One such ritual was to take time before each meal and offer thanks, something that Carol and I still do to this day. And yet I recognize that for many Unitarian Universalists, saying thanks before a meal is problematic because many will ask me, "Jeff, and exactly who are you thanking when you offer thanks at a meal?" Well, I love this question because it allows me to be clear about the gratitude I wish to express. Especially at meals, I like the practice of giving gratitude for the earth that provides sustenance for my body, and I value the practice of giving thanks for those who have prepared the meal. And sometimes I preemptively thank those who will clean up after the meal. More importantly, though, I want gratitude to be part of who I am, and I want it to come from a deep sense of my heart. I do so because when I am troubled, despite what is going on in my life, I want to, at the core of my being, feel a wellspring of gratitude, something that is always with me. And so to nurture my own sense of gratitude, I choose to express it before every meal. Curiously, many years later, I started expressing gratitude in the emails that I send, often ending with the phrase, "with a grateful heart." My next experience with language is more complex, or maybe not. The prevalence of physical violence in society is truly overwhelming. There is domestic violence, bullying, road rage. There are military conflicts, ballroom brawls, gang warfare, sporting events, political rallies, and as we hear in the news these days, sexual assault. Violence can be witnessed in movies, yes, the Avengers, in television programs and video games. What I am equally troubled by is the violence that has crept into our language. We might say, "Oh, I could kill him." We talk about kicking butt, being blown away. The traffic was murder, going ballistic. Shoot me now. Bring out the big guns. The list is endless. These are all statements that any of us is likely to use in everyday language, everyday discourse. And it is exactly these statements that I want to remove from my conversations. I do so because I want nothing to do with the normalization of violence in our society. And so for a number of years now, I've tried to bring greater awareness to the violence in my own language. As I become more sensitive to violent language, there are other examples of language that I want to explore. The word that comes readily to mind is the word hate. Hate is a very intense word. And I began to truly question how we use the word hate. I don't know that I am saying this well, but I don't want hate in my life. I may be annoyed by heavy traffic. I may really dislike the political discourse I hear. I may really regret being late, and I am deeply troubled by people who don't take climate change seriously. I could have used the word hate in any of those examples, but do I really want to be a person who hates? I don't. And I think there is great value in finding other ways to express ourselves. I recall the time when I read a story during the Time for All Ages that used the word hate. When I did, a 4-year-old listening to the story covered his ears, closed his eyes, began to shake his head, and said, "The word hate is not allowed in our house." That is what I call a teachable moment. I could not agree more strongly with the lesson that 4-year-old offered all of us. And I will tell you from the deepest place in my heart that he became my teacher that day. And I want to celebrate the parents who brought that message into their home, because too often we accept the norm and use the word hate without any reflection. And when we do, sadly, it then becomes too easy to use the word hate towards individuals or groups. There are other words that I pay attention to. One is the word idiot. What I'm about to tell you may surprise you, and it may trouble you. A number of years ago, we had a guest speaker at the Unitarian Universalist congregation where I was the minister. He was kind of a local celebrity because he was very outspoken in his views. I went to sermon reflections after he spoke. I'm trying to get rid of the word talk back, so we went to sermon reflections. But I went not with an agenda, but to hear more of what he had to say. He had a good message. After about the third time he referred to those he disagreed with as idiots, I raised my hand. He called on me, and not unlike the 4-year-old in the Time for All Ages, I said, "In our congregation, we don't talk like that. We don't call people idiots." I made reference to our first principle, where we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, no exceptions, including and especially those we disagree with. He graciously accepted what I had to say, and sermon reflections continued. Sadly, though, he never returned as a guest speaker. You're probably tired of my examples, so this next example will be brief. I have real concerns about the word stupid. And so I started using the word silly in its place, like, "That was a silly thing to do." Or, you know, the KISS principle, "Keep it simple, silly." To call something or someone, even oneself, stupid feels violent to me. This is my final and most recent example, and it may be the most poignant. In the last few years, there is another kind of language that I am increasingly sensitive to. I caught myself telling someone, "I have a meeting I have to go to." It sounded like I was headed into complete drudgery. And I know what you're thinking. Jeff, it was a meeting. I know it sounds like I am really splitting hairs, but stay with me. I want you to consider the following. As a parish minister, I did memorial services for the members of my congregation who died. Instead of speaking about a meeting, suppose I said, I have to do a memorial service on Friday. Because we have become accustomed to have-to language, that may not sound particularly troubling, but I want to contrast it with the following. Suppose instead of saying, I have to do a memorial service on Friday, suppose I said, I get to do a memorial service on Friday. It changes everything. Instead of saying, I have to pick up the kids, suppose I said, I get to pick up the kids. Instead of saying, I have to write a sermon, suppose I said, I get to write a sermon. So yes, I am trying to replace the have-tos in my life with the get-tos. What I hope I am conveying in this sermon is that I believe our choice of words matter. When I say, watch your language, this is not a chastisement. I'm not pointing my finger telling you to shape up. When I say watch your language, it is an invitation to observe your words and see what they reveal to you. I see it as an opportunity to look deeply into how we speak and how we feel about what we are talking about. I suggest this because I am increasingly convinced that how we speak does not just reveal how we speak, but that it can also shape how we feel. If we want to feel more gratitude, perhaps the starting place is to express more gratitude, genuine gratitude for the many blessings that we have. If you believe, as I do, that we have become insensitive to the violence in our society, consider the practice of first observing how often we use violent imagery in our language, and then consider using different imagery. And if you believe that idiot is a violent word and does not reflect our Unitarian Universalist values, please consider using a different word. If you believe that hate does not really express how you feel, consider other words. I will tell you that in an early draft of the sermons, I actually wrote, "I hate to disappoint you," and I simply changed it to, "I don't mean to disappoint you." I don't want to be a person who hates. If you believe that we do many things that we begrudge, perhaps it is correct to say, "I have to do something." But if you want to radically change the conversation and perhaps change your own attitude in the process, I invite you to say, for example, "I get to go to a congregational meeting." Hear me out. Hear me out. In many faith traditions, voting on how the congregation spends money is not an option. In many faith traditions, choosing your minister, a process you are engaged in, is not an option to the congregation. In Unitarian Universalism, it is. We get to go to congregational meetings. Instead of saying, "I have to cook dinner," how does the conversation change? How might your attitude change if you say instead, "I get to cook dinner"? Instead of saying, "I have to clean my house," how would it feel to say, "I get to clean my house"? Instead of saying, "I have to go to work." Oh, I've lost you now. Oh, my. I didn't realize. Cleaning the house, huh? All right. But hear this one. Instead of saying, "I have to go to work," how would it feel to say, "I get to go to work"? Oh, you're ambivalent, I can tell. All right, that's all right. Food for thought. Speaking here 4 weeks ago, I shared my passion for nonviolent or compassionate communication. One of the most life-changing parts of that work, and I genuinely believe it is life-changing, is to speak without judgment, criticism, or blame of other people. It is hard work, and it only comes with practice. and in the same spirit, expressing gratitude, choosing non-violent words, avoiding words such as stupid and idiot, and changing have to get to, is hard work and takes practice. And the rewards are great. I have a final thought to share, and it amuses me that it comes from our story for all ages. I hope you were listening, because I really do believe that the stories are stories for all ages. For the children, it was, yes, a story about bad words. But if I had asked the children where Albert might have learned the bad word, I suspect one or more of the children would have said he learned it from an adult. What I hope you take from the story for all ages is an understanding of how our language impacts those around us. And it's not just bad words. It's our language filled with violent imagery. It's how we as adults refer to those with whom we disagree. It's the attitude we bring to life. Do our words suggest a life filled with drudgery or opportunity? Filled with things we have to do or get to do. I close with one of my favorite readings in our Unitarian Universalist hymnal. It is hymn number 602, titled, If There Is to Be Peace, it's by Lao Tzu. If there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace between nations. If there is to be peace between nations, there must be peace in the country, in the nations. If there is to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. If there is to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart. I believe that this is the starting place for anything we do. That peace begins in our own hearts. Let us then watch our language, observe our language, and let our language shape our attitudes, whether it is here at the fellowship, in our homes, in our relationships with those we care about, in our relationships with people with whom we are estranged, and yes, even in our relationships with politicians. Let us watch our language and see what it reveals to us, and then make choices and be the people we truly wish to be. May it be so.